and verse 2. Sorry, let me just get there. The Apostle Paul, writing to this young man Timothy, has this to say. He says, "In the things that you have heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who are able to teach others also." I stand before you tonight because a young man and a young woman in around 1959 traveled to South Africa from America. And they were willing to give up their life in America to teach the gospel to lost souls in South Africa. I'm grateful not only to them, but to the people who sent them to South Africa. I'm grateful because I heard the truth. I'm grateful because I obeyed the truth. I'm grateful that they followed what Paul told Timothy to do, and followed what Jesus told the apostles to do. And I stand before you tonight to give you a small insight into the work that's taking place, not only in Africa, but also to some degree in England, where I've been working briefly with some of the members there. And I hope that what I give you tonight gives you some insight to some of the things that we are doing, maybe some of the hardships and trials and tribulations that we face. And I'm pretty sure what you're going to see tonight is you face similar things here. Human beings are human beings wherever they are in the world. And we face the same challenges, the same problems as what you do back here in Bowling Green. So we're going to be speaking about the work in Africa. First of all, I'd like you to understand the complexity due to the size of the continent of Africa. Africa consists of 50 independent countries. It is an enormous landmass. I've traveled across America, and believe me when I say I have traveled. In these last 2 weeks, I've traveled from North Carolina right across to Nevada and back again, and it took a period of 5 days, I think, that we did it in, or 6 days. And it is a vast piece of land. But yet, if I had to try that in Africa, it would take me a lot longer. South Africa is this southern tip here. Japan would fit into that area. China would take up that. India would fit in there. Eastern Europe, Italy, Switzerland, Germany, France, Spain, Portugal, the whole of the USA, and we still have a little bit of land over there, and then we'll fit Great Britain into Madagascar there, and not to forget our islands of the Seychelles up there that are also part of Africa now. So it is an enormous, enormous landmass. And we do not have interstate highways to travel through this landmass. If I had to travel from our house, which is situated in that area there, up to Kenya, which is situated up there, to fly, it takes about 5 hours. To travel by car, it would take me somewhere in the region of 8 to 10 days, because there are no roads. Scott and I were speaking about SUVs earlier on. In South Africa, we use SUVs because we have to use them because the road system is bad. You have a bad thunderstorm, you're going to have muddy roads. And when you travel these roads, you're going to find people stuck. And the right thing to do is you stop and you help them get unstuck. Because further down the road, you're going to be stuck. And they're going to stop and help you get unstuck. And so it goes on. And so you make traveling partners, and sometimes it gives you an opportunity to preach the gospel and teach a man as well. I mean, when you're lying under a truck digging it out, what else is there to discuss? All right. When we look at the gospel being preached in Africa, we see in South Africa, we got White River and Madras of the areas that I preach in. Then we have the preacher training that is taking place in those areas, and part of that has also been that some young men from this congregation or this area have come out and helped us with this work. Brian being one of them that's sitting in the audience here tonight. And somehow he got married when he came back. I don't know what happened in Africa, but anyway. It's wonderful to see him and his wife and get to know her. And I hope to get to know her as well as Cheryl and I got to know Brian. And then, of course, we've got the work in Kenya that we've been involved in. We've also been involved in the work in Zimbabwe and Zambia and some work in Mozambique. But tonight we'll speak about Kenya. And then if we look at this, this is our South African flag. And each area that we've worked in, I've used the country with its flag. Our flag has got a red, white, green, gold, black, and blue. It was a flag designed at the change of the government in 1994. They had a competition and they asked people to design a new flag for the new South Africa. And this design was the one that won the competition, and this is our flag at the moment. It may change to a red flag if we're not careful with who takes over. Our country, South Africa, we do have a good highway system, that's in the red, but once you get out of South Africa, you're on your own. Our work area is there. There's the city of Nelspruit. The Kruger National Park runs up that way. Mozambique is this side. Swaziland is that side there. To give you an idea of where preachers are, up in Richards Bay, Empangeni area is where Paul Williams is. Les Maydell and Paddy Kindleball are down here. Adam Kindleball's in this area here. Down in Port Elizabeth in this area here is Brian Allen. Towards Utenay, Oatsor in this area here, we have a man by the name of Norman Simon. Robin Bauer is in the Cape Town area, in that area there. We have another man up in Paarl. Who's working with people there. Up in Johannesburg, we have Alan Fox, Fred Ligon, and a few other preachers that are in that area. These are part-time preachers that help out. They've got a secular job, and they're helping out the congregations. And then, of course, we've got up in Louis Chichot, which is in that area there, we have James Buchanan and David Beckley, and his wife, Joanne, and family are up in that area there. And then, of course, there's a lot of congregations in the Venda area there. There's a few congregations around Nelspruit, around Johannesburg in the township areas. In this area here, there's quite a few congregations. This province here, there's a few people who worship, but no congregations as yet. So there's still quite a bit of work to be done in South Africa, and it is a big landmass that we need to get through and get to. The congregation in White River was established in 1993. It was the year that Cheryl and I moved down to White River from Johannesburg. Hendrik Hubert was there already, and we established a congregation in the town while working with Madras, Dine Key, and Zwelisha congregations. The challenge, it has 32 members at this stage. We were up to 70 odd members at one stage if everybody was there. We then fell back because of people moving out of the area, and we had some people falling away. The challenges that we had to face and have to face in this congregation, unfortunately, are fornication. We have a problem of divorce and remarriage that we are facing at the moment and dealing with. And then, of course, there's denominational doctrines that creep in with people that come in from the outside, and they bring denominational baggage with them. And I'm sure you identify with that yourselves as you have opportunities to speak to people, convert people, when they come into the congregation, they come in with a lot of preconceived ideas, and you have to teach and preach and bring them through these difficult times. The fornication, unfortunately, in South Africa is a big problem among the young people. In our rural areas, we find that there is no father figure in the home. Part of the problem of this was because of the apartheid system, where we used migrant labor in the mines. So what we would do is we would take these people from the rural area, the men, they would go and work in the mines, and the families were left behind in the village. They were not allowed to, by law, move with the men into these areas. This, unfortunately, has continued to happen, not migrant labor, but because there's been no father figure in the home, what's happened is these children have grown up without fathers to guide them properly. When God says that the home was designed with a father and a mother, in other words, with a husband and a wife, and they were to bring up the children, and the father had the responsibility to teach the child, he knew what he was doing. When we say, no, we can do it alone, the woman can work on her own, she can bring the child up on her own, we make a mess of it. And believe me, it's a big mess. At the moment in South Africa, what is happening is a lot of these young girls are falling pregnant. They're having the children. The government has now gone into a process where they are giving them a subsidy for those children. So what they can do is they can feed the children. Well, unfortunately, what happens is you're dealing with young, immature young girls. So what is the first thing they go and do? They go and buy the makeup and the nail polish and the cell phones and the nice dresses and things like that. The child does not get taken care of. The child gets palmed off on the grandparents. So the grandparents now become responsible for bringing up the child. And that puts pressure on the grandparents. And of course this girl with the nail polish and the makeup and the nice dress goes and gets another young man, and so the process goes on. So this is the problem we're dealing with. This is the problem we're having to teach against. This is the problem we're having to guide these young men and these young women through, and their families, their parents. So fornication is a big problem. Divorce and remarriage is a problem as well, pretty similar to what you're having in America. And what we need to do is we just need to stand firm on God's word on this and make it known that we do not tolerate this type of thing here. We've had a situation in the congregation of White River that we've had to deal with, and we continue to deal with this, with the situation as it is. This lady doesn't believe she's done anything wrong, and now she's living with a man. And we've just told her, look, we cannot tolerate this in amongst us. We cannot have you here. So it's a problem. Denominational doctrines, as I mentioned, I think people understand that when you convert people and they've been a Methodist for all their lives, they're going to come in with some preconceived ideas, and you've got to teach them and guide them through it. Well, the opportunities we have is denominational doctrine is changing in South Africa as it changes here in America. And we use those opportunities to teach people who become disgruntled with that. One of the changes that we've had in South Africa is a number of the denominational churches have now said, we tolerate gay actions, we tolerate gay people in amongst us. We don't see anything wrong with having gay ministers. We don't see anything wrong with having women preachers and teachers. So a lot of people get disgruntled, and we sit down and we teach them and show them this is what God's word says. It opens a door where people say, well, yes, that's what we agreed to. Well, let's sit down and study it further. Let's show you other areas where these people are wrong. So it opens up opportunities to teach. And then, of course, the training of young men in the congregation. We have to prepare them for the future. We have to ensure that they are young men who can take over from us old guys. Okay? If we're not preparing the church for the future, we're going to run into problems. And the problem we're going to run into is the church will eventually die because there's an old people worshipping there, no more young people, and eventually you close the doors on the congregation. We've got Madras congregation. One of the biggest problems that you face in rural areas among the black rural people is tribal tradition and custom that they have. And a lot of this tradition and custom, unfortunately, goes over to witchcraft and worshipping of the ancestors. Now, when somebody dies, regardless of how that person conducted themselves in this life, they could have been the biggest womanizer, drunkard, that you could find on this earth. They could have been a criminal. But when they die, they become an ancestor. And therefore, they become the link between the living and the spiritual world. And you must pay homage to your ancestor. Or he's going to come back and he's going to beat you up somewhere. I'm serious. This is serious stuff. You get these people getting absolutely physically, literally physically ill because he hasn't paid homage to his ancestor and he believes his ancestor is doing something to him. So anything that happens, if there's a lightning strike in the village, they will go to the witch doctor. And the witch doctor will sit down and he'll throw the bones and he'll read the bones and say, all right, here's what's going on. Your ancestor died. You didn't sacrifice the goat to him. You never sprinkled the blood. No, I did sacrifice the goat. No, you sacrificed the wrong goat. And you sprinkled the blood in the wrong place. You need to go back and you need to do this. Because if you don't do it, there's going to be lightning strike again, and this time it's going to strike your hut, and it's going to kill you. And by the way, as you leave, that's going to be $50. Okay? It'll be 50 rand. It's a money-making record. We do it in the Pentecostal side as well, don't we? You see these Pentecostal preachers stand up and give you all these faith healing and that, and you pay for it. So this is a problem that you're dealing with when you go out to teach the gospel. Because you're having to teach these people and make them understand that the ancestors do not exist. The ancestors have no hold on you. The ancestor who has died, who was this terrible person who denied God, is in hell. And I promise you, if he could come and speak to you today, he would be like the rich man saying, please don't come here. So it makes it more difficult to teach them. The other problem that you find among rural congregations is the problem of sin, and one of the big problems is jealousy. You've got to be very, very careful how you handle things in the congregation. We had a lady who had 4 children who had no income, and Cheryl and I said, right, we will help her. So every month we would go out with a grocery pack worth about $200, and we would take it to her so she could feed herself and her 4 children. It created a massive problem in the congregation. Why are we feeding her and we're not feeding them? Well, she's got no income. You've got an income. In actual fact, you should be helping her, but we understand your situation, so help yourself. We'll help her. We're in that position. No, but you must help us. If you help her, you must help me. So that's a difficulty. And it created a lot of problems of jealousy in it. So eventually what we did is we stopped doing it, and we'd just drive by there on odd times and just drop the food off and say, please don't tell anybody you've got this food. Don't let anybody know we've done this for you. Because it creates this problem. As I said, ancestor worship, again, is the problem where they worship their ancestors. When you speak to them about that, they say, well, is Jesus dead? And you say, no. They say, well, did he die? Yes. He rose from the dead. Say, but do you worship him? Yes. Well, he's an ancestor. How's it different from what we are doing? So you have to teach on that level as well. So it creates a situation where there's a different style or different type of teaching that you have to bring across to these people. And believe me, once they get it, they get it. And they do change their lives. Polygamy is also a problem among the congregations in the rural area. Brother Paul Williams was teaching a man, and this man said, I'd like to introduce you to my wife. And Brother Paul Williams sat and he taught the wife as well, and they both obeyed the gospel. A few months later, he was visiting the village, and this man said, I'd like to introduce you to my wife. He said, have you got a new wife? He says, no, this is my old wife. He says, but you introduced me to another woman last time. He says, yes, she's also my wife. So he had two wives. And he didn't see anything wrong with it. So Brother Williams had to sit down and speak to him about it. We've dealt with a few situations like that. Now, oftentimes when you get to the point where the man understands, I can only have one wife, another problem presents itself. Because now he looks at his first wife, who is older, and he looks at his last wife, who is younger, and he says, I want to keep the last wife. And you say, no, you cannot keep the last wife. This is your wife. This is the wife you married. This is the first wife. You have to keep her. No, but I want her. So you get presented with that problem. You also get presented with the problem where this man believes that he's found a way out of his financial dire straits. Where he says, well, yeah, I'm willing to give the wives up. Yeah, I'm quite happy. I'll stay with the old wife. She must go back to her village. Well, yes, but you still need to look after her. You still need to look after the children. That's your responsibility. No, that's a deal breaker. No. I'm quite happy to let the wife go. So that becomes a problem as well. Under the African custom, we have a system called lobola, where the wife is actually sold to the husband for a dowry. That's similar to what we'd have in the Old Testament, I believe. The old system of lobola was supposed to work in a way where the wife was paid for with cows. The cows were then taken to the in-laws' place. What they would do is they would keep the cows. The cows would breed. These cows were kept as insurance, and they were kept as wealth for the wife. If the husband got killed in a battle, we're speaking way back in the 1800s, and the wife had to come back to the village, she would have wealth. Unfortunately, nowadays, what's happened is man's greed has taken over. So what you find in South Africa and in Africa in general, the young women are sent to universities. They're sent to get a very, very good education. For one reason and one reason only. She can now fetch a higher price when her father sells her to her husband. So a girl who's only has a matric, well, she's only worth two cows. But a young lady who's got a degree or an honors degree or master's degree, well, she's anything from 15 cows upwards. So it becomes a thing of business, and we're having to teach them that, look, this is wrong. It's not right that you're doing things like this. Fornication is a big problem. As I mentioned, what happens is these girls fall pregnant so that they can get the grant from the government. And then they can, they're supposed to get that grant to help the babies, but they use it on themselves. This is a picture of the congregation at Madras. This is Samuel, or Sam. He's a young man who suffers with autism. He's the son of Moshe Barney there. He's the blind man. And one of the problems that I think we face many times, Brian Footy Footy, okay. One of the problems we face, I believe, in the church many times is when people get old, I don't know what happens. And I'm praying that when I get to that age, I don't do what many men in the church have done. Moshe Barney starts teaching all sorts of weird doctrine. And we've had to speak to him about it, and it's actually got to the point now where we've told him, we do not want you teaching anymore. Because you're teaching things that are just not Bible-based. And I think it's partly his mind is going, and he's getting all confused. This is a fine young man, Becky. He has a wife and two children now. And I'm really impressed with him. He's doing a lot of preaching. He and his wife go around the village, and they teach and they preach all the time. That's Tolly Mashabani. He's the preacher there. That's two of his sons there. Those are the two twins, Max and Maxwell. They're always getting into all sorts of things. We arrived at the village the one time, and they were playing soccer. And there was a poor chicken running along there. Man, they whacked that chicken with that ball like you couldn't believe. That chicken went tumbling. And I thought, wow, poor chicken. They didn't even stop, man. There wasn't even a heartbeat there. But past that chicken, and they were after this ball. You know, and it was like, well, that poor chicken, no sorrow or anything for that chicken. That's, of course, how it happens in the village. Okay, that's Gracious. That's the other son. Those two young men at the back are the sons of Moshe Barney as well. That's my sister, and she's a Christian in Wales, and we'll get into that at the moment. She's my younger sister. That's Tolly's daughter. And then, of course, myself at the back there. Cheryl was taking the photograph. So there's still a lot of work to be done there, and it is getting done by the men in the congregation there. What I've done is I've helped Becky, and I've helped Tully, and they are busy teaching and preaching. One of the things that I must say, and we'll deal with this a little bit further on in the slides, but these young men coming from America have been a great, great encouragement to Becky. And Becky was a young man that the bicycle was bought for. I mean, he was absolutely over the moon. He still rides his bike, by the way, through the village. Oh, Becky's on his bike with his Bible in one hand. And I think he's now, his son is able to get on the bike with him. So, but they're certainly doing a lot of work, and we're encouraging them to continue working, and he's attending the preacher training that we have as well. Young men of Madras and White River, as I said, the preacher training, having weekly studies with them and teaching them. We basically have started from the beginning of the Bible, gone back to Genesis, and we're reading Genesis together. And what does it say? What do you find? How do you cross-reference? Things like that, and working through it. Also putting them to the test. In other words, I'm testing them, checking them, making sure they understand the work, having them make up sermons, stand before a crowd, and preach and teach. Invited preachers. These are the young men that we've had. from other areas in the United States. Some of you know that young man there. That's Ben, who was with us last year, and we certainly had a good time with him. That's another young man that I think you guys know. He's in Aruba now, I believe, or not so young man, but Bob's been out there a few times, and he's held a few preacher trainings and helped. And, of course, that's Becky there in both instances doing the translating for the young men. And he was certainly impressed that there are young men in the church in America who can preach and teach. So he was really impressed by that, and it has spurred him on. We also, since we've been here in 2007, did some work in Kenya, met up with Bob and a few others, and went and met with some of the brethren in Kenya. The area that we work in is mainly in this area here around Mount Kenya. Nyeri Town is up there, and then we've been up to Nanyuki and other areas there, but this is sort of the main area we worked in. We haven't worked in Nairobi or Mombasa at all, and Bob has been on the eastern side and then up into Uganda up there. The problems that Kenya faces at the moment are problems of Islamic militants that are coming into the country. They've bombed held up a shopping center in Nairobi. You've seen that on the news, I'm sure. And they shot a number of people, then burnt the shopping center down, and it collapsed. They've also taken hostages. They've also shot up a few villages up here on the eastern side along the Somali border. So it's a problem that Kenya is facing. It's a problem that the whole of Africa is starting to face. I was telling Scott the other night that we had one young man who climbed on an aeroplane in South Africa in Cape Town. He was 16 years old. He had been on Facebook, and he had been in contact with ISIS. So parents, I'm warning you, check your children's workings on Facebook. These guys are out there and they're recruiting. They recruited this young man. He was on the plane, and fortunately his parents had picked this up. They managed to get hold of the authorities. They grounded the plane. They got him off the plane, and they've since then been speaking to him and getting things sorted out. A number of young women are joining ISIS, and when they get over there, they discover that all they are is slaves, because there are men that are lined up to marry them. So it's arranged marriages, and these young women don't know it. This is a radical group. It's a very, very dangerous group. Boko Haram is another very, very dangerous group. And these people are present in Africa at this moment, and they are starting to move southwards. 1 congregation we were with is Karatina. I'm sure Bob has spoken to you about this congregation. It's a unique congregation. They are really true servants of God. They work very, very well. They have a strong, strong leadership among the men, and they have a devoted group of Christians. The oldest member of that congregation, if she is still alive, is 94 years of age. And she walks, doesn't ride in a car, she walks to services every Sunday. And the Sunday we were there, she apologized because it had rained so much, the road was muddy, and she kept slipping on the road. And then we discovered that her distance that she walks is 10 kilometers, which is about 5 or so miles. That she walks to services, and then she walks back. When I told the brethren in White River, I said, shame on you. When it's a little bit of rain and you've got to get in your car, and it's a case of, well, we won't go to Wednesday night Bible study now because it's raining. Here's a woman who walked in the mud, and she's 94 years of age. The men of the congregation would not allow us to preach or teach until they had sat down and spoken to us. We weren't even allowed to hand out lesson books they gathered them all together and said, we will go through them, we will establish whether they are sound, and if they are sound, we'll let the congregation use them. So it is certainly a unique congregation in the sense of the African context. Nyeri Town, there's a number of congregations in and around this area. The word is spreading. Opportunities for the work to spread to other areas is taking place. There's a young man, Jack, and Wilson, that are doing a lot of fine work over there. I get their reports, and I've been in contact with Jack for a number of years. And then, of course, they've had some setbacks, but on the whole, things have been moving forward, and they're doing fairly well. Well, part of our need is also to go where the gospel needs to be preached. Last year, I had an opportunity, and to just give you some background, my sister married a young man from England. Oh, I mustn't say that. Sorry, Wales. He would really be upset with me saying that, because Wales is not part of England, okay? Married this young man. He was a member of the church, and they moved to England. They didn't move to Wales, and stayed there for a few years, and then they moved across to Germany. Unfortunately, what happened is, with them moving around like that, they weakened and they fell away from the church. I had a few conversations with them. Cheryl had some conversations with my sister, and slowly but surely, they started worshipping again in their home. And to worship in your home on your own is very, very difficult. When they got back to Wales, they contacted me to say, we've gone back to church, but we're not happy with the church down in Cardiff in Wales, because there's a lot of things that they're doing that is not right. Last year we had an opportunity to go over for my niece's wedding, and I sat down and had a long conversation with my brother-in-law, and we spoke about the church, spoke about the work. Since then, they have left the church in Cardiff. It's a very, very liberal church, and I'll explain it in a moment, and you'll see how liberal it is. So they stay in a town called Abergavenny, and there is no church there at the moment. Scotland, we attended a worship service in Dundee, and we also attended a church, well, Cheryl attended a Bible study in a congregation near Glasgow. And again, it's a sad tale to tell. That is an outline of the map of Wales. Isn't that cool, girls? They've got a dragon on their flag. That's the flag of the Welsh. They have a red dragon. And I keep getting reminded by my brother-in-law, we don't know how to play rugby. And I keep reminding him we won 2 World Cups. So anyway, it'll be interesting teaching in Wales with my brother-in-law. The area, if you look at Wales, they in Abergavenny, which is up here, Cardiff is down here, there's a church there, there's another church down in Bristol. But there's nothing in this region here. No gospel being taught, no gospel being spread. People are oblivious of the truth. And there's many opportunities that can be used there. As I said, there's no congregation. The village population of Abergavenny is about 8,000 people. The opportunities are their morning markets, community halls, and, of course, old age homes. And in all these places, they allow you to preach the gospel. And yet nobody's doing it, not even the denominations. In the morning markets, what they do is you can apply for a stall there. You pay the equivalent, I think, of $7. It's about £2 or £3. So you pay $7 and you can set up a stall and you can put anything there that is legal. And Bible tracts and Bibles and things like that are legal. So you can set up a whole Bible tract there, track, and they have these morning markets once a month in different areas of the town or of the village. And you can teach and help people along there and set things up. Let's go back there. I pressed the wrong thing there. As I said, I break it sometimes. This is the main street of Abergavenny. This is the open street market, which again, you can do the same thing. Old age homes, they welcome people to come in and read to old people. And they don't care what you're reading to them as long as it's legal. And the scriptures are legal. And there's some old people there who want the scriptures read to them. So these are areas that can be taught in and can be helped along. In Scotland, which is north of England, there are a few congregations. The one was at Dundee that we attended. Then down here in Glasgow, East Kilburn, there's a congregation there. And there's a few other smaller congregations in there. But the problem that we have there is liberalism. In Dundee, Lipscomb University is one of the sponsoring groups. They have a big outreach program that they bring university students from America, and they do this outreach. Our experience on the Sunday morning that we went there, my niece and her husband are now worshipping there. We walked in, and this Scotsman he's Irish, stood up and said, "Aye, good morning to you all. Go get your coffee and your bun and come and sit down." So everybody walked off and got their coffee and their bun, and they came and they sat down, and we then had a Bible study. And I looked at Cheryl, she looked at me, and it was like, okay, this is new. And then he stood up and he said, "Right, this morning we are going to be studying Mark, Luke, and John." I thought, well, okay, this is interesting. And he said, "Right, let's open our Bibles at Mark. Mark chapter 3 and verse 4. Okay, now let's go over to Luke. Luke chapter 6 and that. Okay, let's go over to John." And I said, what's going on here? So I kept quiet for a while and eventually put my hand up and I said, well, let's go back and have a look at a few things. And we started speaking about a few things and discussing verses, and I started paging through the Bible. At the end of the cast, he came to me and said, "Where are you from?" I said, "I'm from South Africa." He says, "Are you a member of the church?" I said, "I'm a preacher." He says, "Oh, I could tell with your knowledge of the Bible." I thought, but you're the teacher. You should have this knowledge. Well, then we went into the main service. All right, if you guys want, just fill up your mugs with coffee and go and get some more buns, and we're going to have the main service. I was shocked. They had the main service, Lord's Supper, singing, and of course sips of coffee and eating the bun in between. And then this man stood up and he preached. And he said, "Well, you know, we had a wedding yesterday and I had to decide between the wedding or the sermon." And I said, "Well, okay, I've heard that joke before from preachers. It's an old joke." The sad truth is, I think he did concentrate only on the wedding. These people have virtually no Bible knowledge. It's a big social club, that's all it is. It's a fertile ground for teaching and preaching, and they really need a lot of teaching. My WebEx class that I have, that I presented this afternoon from the building here, back to South Africa, I have some of these people from Scotland and Wales come on, and we are teaching them that way as well. But we need to get over there and teach them as well. That's Dundee, an aerial shot of the whole city. It extends from that area right down and then across the river. These are community halls that they hire for church services and that. It doesn't cost a lot of money, but the only restriction you've got is time-based. You can hire it for a period of an hour, and then you have to use it, and in an hour you have to be out, or you can hire it for longer periods. So it is a good thing, and it's a way that you can have your classes set up and that. The only problem is you have to go in each time and set the hall up and that. But I think it's a good start if a congregation starts over there. Glasgow, there's only one faithful congregation that we know of. The rest, as far as we know, are liberal in nature. Authority is not taught. As I said, they're mostly liberal congregations. And when you start speaking about what does the Bible say on this, people just shrug their shoulders. Their Bible knowledge is not there. And there are many opportunities in the Glasgow region for the gospel to be spread. As I said, this is Glasgow. And Buchanan is very popular in Glasgow. You have the Buchanan Mall, you have the Buchanan Street, the Buchanan Street Station, the Buchanan Square, and there's a whole lot of other Buchanan. My son was quite surprised when we got out there. He said, "Dad, everywhere you turn, you see our surname." I said, "Yes, my boy, walk with pride." Using technology, as I said, we're using the WebEx classes. We have classes with people we can have classes with people all over the world. At the moment, we're having classes with people in Wales, in Scotland, and then, of course, different places of South Africa. I'm also developing some courses that we can put up on WebEx where people can join these courses and fill in the course notes and things like that. So it is certainly a good way. Now, the future. South Africa at the moment has a very, very bad political situation, and it's getting worse. There's no ways of hiding it from anybody anymore. Our government of the day has not met the expectations of the people. Last year we had 7 days in the whole year where we had no service delivery riots. So for every day last year, excepting for 7, some area in South Africa had a service delivery riot. People burned tires in the street, burned buildings down, schools, hospitals, things like that, that are being burnt down in their protest and frustration at the government. The unfortunate situation with that is it has given rise to a radical political group called the Economic Freedom Fighters. And they have got into government and they are causing major upheaval in Parliament. Parliament cannot do its work. Every time they try to, these guys disrupt it and throw tantrums and cause mayhem in the Parliament. We have a government that is extremely corrupt. Our president has been given what they call security upgrade to his home to the tune of 284 million rand. We've been told that spending has not stopped. There's even more money to be spent on this upgrade. He was given a swimming pool when we asked him as the public through the public protector, "Why is that a security?" He says, "No, that's not a swimming pool. It's a fire pool. It's to pump the water out in case my house catches fire." So these are the answers we're getting. So you can understand the frustration. We've also been told that our land, as white people, we will be losing it. We don't know when. We don't know under what conditions. But they've told us that if you own any land over a certain amount of hectares or acres, you will be losing it. We are fast heading towards a Zimbabwe situation. The rand dollar situation is the rand is devalued, and since we've come to America, it's devalued even further. In this year alone, the rand is devalued by almost 30%. What that's going to do is it's going to bring extreme hardship to the people in the country. And what it's going to do is it's going to mean that stuff that we import to keep the country going, to keep our electricity and that going, is going to become prohibitively expensive. We have load shedding every day now. What load shedding is they switch your electricity off. Your electricity goes off for a period of 2 hours, if you're lucky. Otherwise, it's 4 hours every day. They do not tell you when they're going to do it. They just switch it off because our grid is under such extreme pressure. We have our bill for gas for a car is $4 at the moment per gallon, and it's getting more expensive. So these are the things that we are facing at the moment. As white South Africans, I don't know what the future holds. We're not sure where it's going. We're having an election next year, and I think we'll be better able to gauge what will happen there. But certainly, if the ANC loses any more ground as to what they did in the election in 2014, I think there's going to be a civil war that develops, especially if the EFF comes in. 2019 is our presidential elections, and the president's already making noises that he wants to serve another term. So that's going to create other problems. So we're on a knife edge at the moment. We're not sure which way it's going to go. So please pray for us. We certainly need it. In Africa, Kenya, Zimbabwe, Zambia, the gospel's been preached and it needs to continue to be preached. They're stable for the moment, but their problems are outside the country where we've got terrorists and things like that that are causing trouble. Wales and Scotland, my plan is that next year I will be going over. We're hoping to spend a period of 2 to 3 months over there teaching and preaching the gospel. And I hope this will take place because they certainly do need that. And if we can continue, we will continue doing that if the Lord wills. And again, I'm asking you to pray for this, and I would certainly like guidance in this from members of the congregation. But the gospel needs to be preached and taught in those regions and those areas. That's a brief summary, really, of the work that is taking place. I know that there have been other men who brought their reports back to you. I know that there have been the reports that I have sent to you, and I will certainly continue working as long as we can in safety in South Africa. But please understand, when it gets to the point where they take our land from us, I think that's an indication they want us to leave. And we will be leaving. So we'll keep you informed as to how things are going. Crime situation in the country has deteriorated. There are more murders taking place. Our national average of murders per year is most probably triple of what you have in America. And, of course, then there's the bad rape statistics and things like that. But I don't want to leave you on a depressing note. Know assuredly that the work continues there, the preaching will continue, and we continue to prepare young men to continue preaching the gospel and assist them where we can, and certainly assist families where we can. And any young people who would like to come and visit, feel free to ask us. We have a home. It is open to you. And we will accommodate you. And we will protect you, I promise you. Thank you very much.